Mr. Speaker.
Order, order.
It was a long week in the saddle for our 121 members of Parliament. Adding to the usual sitting week's 17 hours, the Business Committee allowed an extra 4 hours for debate on treaty settlement bills on Wednesday morning, with the government then keeping the chamber running well into Friday to pass two budget bills under urgency for reasons explained by the Leader of the House, Jerry Brownlee, following the adjournment of the budget debate just an hour and three quarters after it began on Thursday afternoon.
Mr. Speaker, I move that urgency be accorded the introduction and passing of the Climate Change Response Removal of Transitional Measures Amendment Bill and the introduction and passing of the Customs and Excise Tobacco Products Budget Measures Amendment Bill. These are two bills that arise out of budget decisions announced in the budget read by the Finance Minister earlier today. Speaker, those are bills that the government considers deserve the urgent attention of the House, as I have moved.
Mr. Brownlee's view on the need for urgency met immediate ridicule from across the chamber when Labor's chief whip, Chris Hipkins, rose to speak in the first reading debate on the bill to phase out the transitional one-for-two surrender obligation measure from the New Zealand Emissions Trading Scheme.
Mr. Speaker, as I sat there listening to the government's budget this afternoon, all I could think was, is that it? Really, was that it? Here we are, under urgency, debating two bills, and then I'm thinking, is that it? Is that all that they can really come up with? That's the total extent of the government's urgent agenda following this year's budget.
Following on from Labor's Chris Hipkins, Greens co-leader James Shaw mocked a government claim that the bill was a significant step towards meeting the country's global emission reduction targets.
0.7%. A 0.7% reduction in emissions. Significant? Give me a break.
The Greens co-leader's criticism of the government's climate change bill finally passed on the Voices after the House resumed, still under urgency at 9 on Friday morning, was echoed on the next bill by the party's health spokesman, Kevin Hague, who recalled the urgency accorded tobacco price increases in budgets back in the day.
I remember sitting next to the radio listening to finance ministers from the past reading out the budget, and very often there was a measure to implement or increase an excise tax on tobacco or alcohol, which would typically take effect pretty much immediately. The House would move immediately to debate a bill that would take immediate effect. And Mr. Speaker, for bills of that nature, of course, there was a reason for urgency. Mr. Speaker, I'm wondering actually what the reason is for urgency for this bill. For this bill that actually doesn't take effect until the beginning of next year.
Time enough, Kevin Hague said, to hear submissions from experts and the public, a step that's bypassed under urgency. While New Zealand First Revenue spokesman Fletcher Tabatow explained why his party would stand alone in voting against the bill.
There is no debate from New Zealand First that smoking is a problem that kills New Zealanders. There's no debate on that. But that's not what we're talking about here today. What we're talking about here today is a taxation measure put on, and everyone agrees, the poorest members of New Zealand society. They will suffer the burden of this more than anyone else.
While Fletcher Tabatow and New Zealand First resolved the dilemma of being anti-smoking and anti-tax by voting against the bill, the ACT Party's David Seymour explained why he would be voting for it.
Mr. Speaker, I rise on behalf of the ACT Party in favour and support of this bill. Even though I regard it as a regrettable piece of public policy, and as I've said in earlier stages, that is because of the wider context of the need to support this budget.
That need secured in a formal agreement with John Key's National Party to vote with the government on issues of confidence and money supply, similar to the agreement binding United Futures' Peter Dunn.
Mr. Speaker, it's been a privilege over the last number of years to work with my colleagues in the ACT Party and the Māori Party, alongside the National Government, to achieve a series of policy changes.
Adding to the votes of Messrs Dunn and Seymour, the Māori Party adds two more with one of its two co-leaders, Te Urua Flavel, explaining one of the benefits of their formal agreement with National.
Mr. Speaker, since being a support party in government, we've secured and influenced more than $2 billion dollars worth of budget gains. $2 billion. Now, if some media person had have asked me that question before we came in, we could have put it out there. But I'm helping media today to understand that the Māori Party is bringing something special, unique and Māori to this House, Mr Speaker, not just by presence, but in real substantive gains for our people.
While Te Uru Flavel and his co-leader, Marama Fox, added their votes to the two from ACT and United Future, giving National a total of 63 to pass its budget, the Māori Party and Peter Dunn had crossed to the other side of the chamber the previous night, adding their votes to the combined 58 of the three main opposition parties to nudge a members' bill along another stage. That bill was from Labor's Sue Moroney, extending paid parental leave from 18 to 26 weeks, on its second time around, as noted by Ms Moroney when starting off its second reading.
I move that the parental leave and employment protection, 6 months paid leave and work contact hours amendment bill be now read a second time, for a second time. Because this is a bill that has essentially been before this Parliament before, a bill that was drawn out in 2012. So for 4 years, for four long years, we've been debating in this Parliament a bill to get paid parental leave to 26 weeks, and we've had a majority support for this bill passing, and yet the government has continued to play political games for those four long years with families' lives to try and prevent it from passing.
Sue Moroney said she hoped it would be the last time that she had to lead off a second reading of the bill.
And I hope that the government will see sense and remove its threat of a financial veto.
And even perhaps come to the party the following afternoon.
In the budget, we will see the National Government actually propose an extension to paid parental leave. Are we about to witness that? That they're going to put the backbenchers up as fodder to actually argue against it and oppose it while Bill English has in his back pocket a plan to actually extend paid parental leave? Well, I believe that's exactly what we're about to see played out.
National's backbenchers proved Sue Moroney right on one count, rising one after another to oppose her bill, but unable to alter the arithmetic that had sustained its passage so far.
The ayes are 61, the noes are 60. The bill will be read a second time.
But Ms Moroney's crystal ball let her down as Bill English rose to reveal the contents of his back pocket shortly after two on Thursday afternoon.
Mr Speaker, I move that the appropriations 2016-17 estimates bill be now read a second time. Mr Speaker, it's a privilege to present the eighth budget of this National-led government. We are shaping policy around a 20 to 30-year view of how we can improve the lives of New Zealanders. Budget 2016 does that by making positive long-term choices that will further strengthen our economy and our communities into the future. Mr Speaker, I commend this budget to the House.
Just under 45 minutes from go to woe, Mr English's budget speech was followed by the Leader of the Opposition, Andrew Little, starting the budget debate.
They said, you know, make sure you start your budget speech with a joke. But I've had the wind take out of my sails by Bill English. He started by saying, I'm presenting the budget today. Mr Speaker, that wasn't a budget. That wasn't a budget for New Zealand in 2016. That was scratched out, patchwork, hodgepodge, half measures designed to look like an economic strategy. Right. And it's not. That doesn't go anywhere near it. You know, you'd think, Mr Speaker, 8 years on, 8 years they've had in charge of the nation's purse strings, 8 years to make their mark in history, 8 years to add to the legacy bequeathed to them by the many governments that have gone before them, 8 years to make their contribution to building this great nation. And what we've had served up to us today is no answer to the real problems being faced all across the land by all New Zealanders. 8 years they've had to help Kiwis get ahead. 8 years to help middle New Zealand. And once again, in this budget, Bill English's eighth, they have failed. This is a budget that demonstrates yet again they have lost touch, they don't know what's going on, and they have no answers to the problems that New Zealanders are most concerned about. The people who, as the Minister of Finance says, go out each day to work to pay their taxes. They are not helped by this budget. There are new burdens placed upon them. You just look at how out of touch this government has become. John Key, who says there is no housing crisis, just go and ask Wins. Paula Bennett, who says there is a housing crisis, but she's decided that there's a housing crisis for 150 families who are already tenants of Housing New Zealand. They need the help. Never mind the homeless living in garages and cars, they get no help. Oh, hold on, no, there was a second announcement, wasn't there? They might get some help. Their response to one of the biggest social crises facing New Zealand is just an absolute shambles, and this budget does nothing for it. Then there's the Minister of Health, Dr. Coleman, or as they call him in the health sector, Dr. No. And it's not helped by this budget. It's not helped by this budget. And then we have the Minister of Finance himself, who, when he talks about the young unemployed, 18 to 24-year-olds, whose number has grown by 26,000 under that government, and he says they are pretty damn hopeless. And there's nothing in this budget for them either. Mr. Speaker, we deserve better. Let's have a look at what they've done on housing. Nothing in the budget today will hardly make a difference to the real problems in our housing sector. This government is still in denial about the real problems faced by thousands and thousands of New Zealanders. $100 million for new land. Let's put that in perspective. Last year's budget provided $52 million for new land. And the great, well, one of the three housing ministers, because they need so many, because, you know, they're really on top of this problem. Well, so last year's budget got 13 hectares. 13 hectares and a few hundred houses in 2 years' time. This budget allocation will get 25 hectares and then who knows how many houses. So after 2 years, we'll have 37 hectares and just a few hundred houses to fix a problem that is tens of thousands behind schedule. That's the real magnitude of the problem, and this budget does nothing. On social housing, they say $200 million for social housing. This is a government that has sold 2,700 state houses and hasn't replaced a single one. And they wonder why we have people now living in garages and cars in Auckland and around the countryside. They have failed. And they cannot see their failure, and they will not face up to it. That is a disgrace. None of the measures in this budget will lift home ownership rates in New Zealand. Those struggling people in Auckland who, no matter how hard they work, how hard they save, they cannot get that deposit and they will not get that first home. And this budget does not help. It will not solve the crisis. Then in health, the reality is, even with the extra money, it still does not keep up. And it gets worse, because in the subsequent years, after the financial year that this budget covers, the money goes down. It's as if the New Zealand population is going to shrink. Suddenly all the elderly who are going to be retiring, there's going to somehow be fewer of them. This is not a plan for the future. This is not a plan for a good health system in New Zealand in the future. More New Zealanders will wind up in greater pain for a lot longer because of this budget and this government's failure and this Minister of Health's failure. In education, let's face up to the stark reality of education in this budget. Operational funding is frozen. There is no extra money for every school. There is no money to keep up with the rising costs of running a school. And we know what that means. Parents whose costs of contributing to education are already rising 10 times faster than the rate of inflation, they will pay more. Their costs will go up because this government does not see that they have to support a high-quality public education system. Happy to put the money in the charter schools, but every other child in the country attending every other public school, they get nothing extra. This is not a budget for success for our children. And then in police, when so many New Zealanders are concerned about safety and security in their communities, in their towns and cities, and what do we get in the police budget? Nothing extra. Are they going to pay the police? They're going to pay the police the negotiated pay increase. No extra police, and all those police stations that have been closed by Judith Collins will remain closed and understaffed. You see, here's the thing. They're not just out of touch, they just don't care. They don't care about Middle New Zealand. They've given up. And you look at the budget projections, you look at unemployment. They say they're concerned about people out of work. By 2020, the unemployment rate for New Zealand under their economic stewardship will still be higher than what it was in 2008.
That's right.
This is not a budget for the future. This is not a budget for the future, Mr. Speaker. We need a government that's got to stop running our economy like it's a school gala day, with sort of, you know, candy floss here and a few trinkets there. And we cannot have budget day turned into the quickfire raffle, where there's lots of spin, a few little sort of prizes handed out here and there, but you get home and you find it's past its use-by date. Because that's the way they're running it. That's the way they're running it. And it is time to get past the spin. You see, what we've had under this government is 8 years of the economic gains that have been made, a much, much greater share going to those at the very top, and those who work for a wage or a salary getting much, much less. Middle New Zealand missing out for 8 years, and now with the eighth budget under their belt, more of the same.
Then it was back across the chamber.
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, there was poor old Andrew Little, was it? Who's achieved only one thing in 2016, and that is make David Cunliffe look popular and confident. That is it for 2016. Mr. Speaker, they don't call him Angry Andrew for nothing, but not without good reason, because half of his caucus want to leave and the other half of the caucus want him to leave. Mr. Speaker, you can't say that he doesn't have a vision like all of the great left-wing leaders around the world. I mean, just take a look at it, Mr. Speaker. Bernie Sanders wants to rid the world of poverty. Jeremy Corbyn, he wants to rid the world of conflict. And Andrew Little, he wants to rid the phone book of Chinese-sounding surnames, Mr. Speaker. And he's got a vision for all of those Chinese and Indian chefs. He wants them to be called Bruce or Trevor. That's his idea of a Chinese chef, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yet again, another great budget from Bill English. The man is a maestro, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Budget 2016 paints a picture of positivity and success for New Zealand and our economy. Let's just take a bit of a look at some of those numbers, because they are sparkling, Mr. Speaker. 3% growth for the next 5 years, stronger than almost any of our counterpart countries. Mr. Speaker, 170,000 new jobs over the next 3 to 4 years, on top of the 200,000 we created in the last 3 years, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, under this government, average wages have gone up $11,000. $11,000 a year. That is $211 per week for the average New Zealander. They're going to go up another $5,000 over this budget period, which will mean the average New Zealander earning $307 per week in their pocket under a National-led government, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, we do know that Labor know how to tax and they know how to spend. Well, a National-led government knows how to get expenses under control. They were 34% of GDP. They're now under 30% of GDP, Mr. Speaker, and debt on track to be 20% of GDP by 2020. Go and have a look around the world. Japan, government debt at 220% of GDP. The United States, the better part of 90%. The United Kingdom, 80 or 90%. Australia, with deficits as far as the eye can see. Mr. Speaker, Bill English has got this country on the right track and under control, and debt under control as well. Let's look at the facts, Mr. Speaker. This is an economy that is attracting more people, attracting more investment, attracting more international students, attracting more visitors. Mr. Speaker, this is a place
where interest rates are low and where inflation is low. And when it comes to older New Zealanders, this is a government that cares and delivers. How do I know that? How do I know that, Mr. Peters? Well, under National and this government, New Zealand Super's gone up 34% in the time we've been here. 34%. The average married couple, $250, a fortnight better off under a National-led government. Mr. Speaker, I sometimes listen to Mr. Little, and I accept when I made a comment to Jerry Brownlee before about Andrew Little's speech, he said, "You, mate, are the only one that's listening." But I listen to it, and I hear this doe-eyed kind of history lesson, which is so out of touch with reality. Here's what happened when National came into government. Deficits as far as the eye could see. It wasn't a health system that was delivering for New Zealand. It was a disgrace, Mr. Speaker. Cancer sufferers in this country didn't get help. They got a boarding pass for Australia. That's what happened under a Labor government, Speaker. Mr. Speaker, 35,000 New Zealanders a year before we came into office said, "I've got a good idea. It's called living in Australia under a National-led government." Mr. Speaker, the education system under those people didn't even bother to tell parents whether their kids could read or write, Mr. Speaker. It was a country where core interest rates were four times faster. Mr. Speaker, wages were going up, all right. So was inflation. Real wages were going backwards, Mr. Speaker. And in the last 5 years, they increased government spending by 50%. Our economy was hopelessly ill-equipped to cope. So, Mr. Speaker, let's have a look at the position today. 8 years on, what is the situation across our economy? Well, it's prosperous and productive. And this is where expansion is taking place. Horticulture, viticulture, ICT, export education, tourism, beef, lamb, honey, manufacturing, high tech. Here's a clue about how the New Zealand economy is going. There are now more Australians coming to live in New Zealand than New Zealanders going to Australia. And the number one selling white wine in Australia is a Kiwi Sauvignon Blanc. This is a sneaker. It's a takeover. It's a takeover. Mr. Speaker, the number eight is lucky in Chinese, is it not? The number eight is lucky. Bill English's eighth budget will be successful for our country, but not because of eight and not because of luck, Mr. Speaker, because of good management and good choices. You see, Mr. Speaker, while the opposition are lost in a fog of negativity, Bill English shines a light on prosperity and opportunity. Mr. Speaker, while the opposition seek to close off new markets and ban those who were not born here from investing or emigrating to our country, Bill English seeks to make it easier for New Zealand companies, large and small, to compete and win on the world stage. And, Mr. Speaker, while the opposition demonstrates a complete lack of faith in New Zealanders, their abilities and their drive to want to succeed and get ahead without the support of the government, it's Bill English that empowers them to make the most of their lives, to back themselves and their families, and to understand the most basic principle in life, that there is no substitute for hard work and determination. Mr. Speaker, this country, in New Zealand, it has a brighter future, and for the very large part, we have the maestro, Bill English, to thank for that.
And there we must leave the budget debate to join Rhys Lyon in the committee rooms.
In a submission to the Local Government and Environment Committee on Thursday, KiwiRail lawyer Jonathan Earle said the government's proposed resource legislation amendment bill would cut KiwiRail out of consultation over resource consents if building developments were not directly adjacent to railways, and said it could lead to more level crossing accidents.
It is important to note that increased road traffic at a level crossing can occur even though the rail corridor is not immediately adjacent to the subdivision or plan activity, yet the bill in its current form would curtail KiwiRail's ability to influence the planning or consenting process precisely because the rail infrastructure was not adjacent. Development close to railways obviously has the potential to bring more people into close proximity with rail vehicles.
Mr. Earle explained KiwiRail's concerns with that aspect of the bill.
KiwiRail's concern is that the bill in its current form and the restrictions on KiwiRail's ability to be involved as an infrastructure provider that may not be on an adjacent site will lead to planning and consenting outcomes that do not adequately consider rail safety. This will ultimately result in increased rates of fatalities, serious injuries and collisions.
Jonathan Earl said level crossing accidents were already a serious problem.
On average, 4 New Zealanders die in level crossing accidents each year. Another 14 people will suffer serious injuries, and there will be 22 serious collisions between trains and motor vehicles at level crossings. And these collisions also have very serious psychological effects for our train drivers.
Mr. Earl called for changes to the bill to resolve KiwiRail's concerns.
What KiwiRail is seeking is the ability to be considered an affected party for consent applications and plan changes if it has rail infrastructure located nearby. This will keep the public and our staff safe, help ensure the availability of a level crossing into the future and managing traffic flows.
KiwiRail General Counsel Jonathan Earl with that submission on the Resource Legislation Amendment Bill to the Local Government and Environment Committee on Thursday. A day earlier, a petition calling for a ban on smoking in cars was the subject of a submission to the Health Committee from Ministry of Health Chief Advisor Dr. Pat Tui, who said the evidence was clear that cigarette smoke in cars was particularly harmful to children.
That's for several reasons. One is that their ability to take themselves out of that exposure is limited. Second is that the level of smoke in cars where a person is smoking is higher. And also that's a degree of the time of exposure. The sort of harm that affects children particularly relates to respiratory disease. And the other risk, although it is a small one, it's quite a serious one, which is the existence of matches and lighters in cars leading to a fire in the car. So it's a rare occurrence, but is a significant issue and can lead to fatalities.
Dr. Tui said about $1 million had been spent on advertising to warn against the dangers to children from smoking in cars, a figure which led to this thought from Health Committee member Annette King.
Would it be cheaper just to ban it? $1 million to the police to stop those they see smoking. I bet they'd love it.
And policing was the subject of a completely different petition over at the Law and Order Committee on Wednesday, calling on the Minister and Commissioner of Police to ensure a police officer be resident in the town of Ross in the South Island's west coast. The petition was presented by Ross Community Representative Charlie Macbeth.
This is the third time in recent history that Ross and the surrounding communities have had to fight to retain a police constable in our area. This is the first time we have had to take the battle all the way to Parliament. Now, Ross is part of a West Coast-wide effort against a police proposal to remove all community constables from Karamea to Ross.
Mr. Macbeth outlined the need for a police officer in his town.
Ross has not had a community constable at its police station since April last year, and petty crime and burglaries have already increased. Early intervention is a community constable having a little talk in the right ear, and that is generally enough for an individual to think about their actions. Ambulance at the top of the cliff stuff, not at the bottom. Community-based policing should not be lost to the West Coast.
Charlie Macbeth, and that petition remains under consideration of the Law and Order Committee. Meanwhile, the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee has called for public submissions on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Amendment Bill, which implements the TPP free trade deal. To make a submission, go to our website, parliamenttoday.co.nz, and click on Make Submission at the top of the page. Submissions are due by July 22nd.
That report from Rhys Lyon. The House sat for a total of just over 27 hours, 10 more than usual. I'm Tom Pruin, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.